thank everyone for joining this edition of the New Normal podcast series. Today is going to be a topic that is not often discussed in combination, where we will be discussing the next healthcare revolution fueled by AI, machine learning, and intelligent automation. I'm Jeff Garibaldi, founder and CEO of Aspire Health Innovations. We're a consultancy which is engaging with healthcare technology companies to accelerate their success, often focused on time to investment capital raises, as well as sales revenue traction and everything else in between. So I expect this is going to be a very thought-provoking session, fusing together two powerful capabilities which have tremendous opportunity to increase revenue, reduce costs, and avoid expenses for healthcare organizations. Many speak about the benefits of AI and machine learning. Some speak of the benefits of intelligent automation, while few are optimally applying these in a combined fashion to really move the needle forward. So I'm honored to be joined by a set of panelists today who are thought leaders in their field, making a lasting impact on healthcare. And I would like to first introduce Dr. Arun Pampapur, who is the co-founder and CEO of Bloom Value Corporation. And Arun, if you could introduce yourself to the audience.
Perfect. And thank you so much for inviting me to this New Normal podcast, Jeff. It's a great opportunity. So I founded Bloom in 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, to apply enterprise AI to healthcare. And I've been working on doing that for the last 3 years almost. And Bloom focuses on transforming healthcare systems through the use of AI and automation. And our mantra for healthcare enterprise transformation is common data, connected metrics, and integrated actions. And prior to founding Bloom, I was with IBM's research division for most of my career as a distinguished engineer and director. And I joined IBM after getting my PhD from the University of Michigan in AI. And while at IBM as a distinguished engineer, I had the opportunity to launch several enterprise AI products across the company. And a quick factoid, I hold several US patents, and I stopped counting after the number crossed 150. So with that, I'll pass this back to you.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And next, I'd like to introduce Jeff Hatfield, who is the co-founder and CEO of Four Points Health. Jeff, could you share a bit about your background?
Sure. Thanks, Jeff, and appreciate being here. Thanks to Life365 for sponsoring this, and welcome everyone who's in attendance. I've been involved in intelligent automation. I've dedicated the last 20 years of my career to applying intelligent automation into the healthcare space. I've worked with dozens and dozens of providers and payers all across the country and have been designing and implementing intelligent automation solutions like, for example, end-to-end continuum of care automation, as well as end-to-end revenue cycle management automation. And over the years, those have netted up to over $2 billion in annual savings for the group of clients that I've been working with. So we've been very, very successful, had a huge impact on healthcare, and continue to do that daily. I also founded CIAC, C-I-A-C, which is the Clinical Intelligent Automation Council. If anyone's interested in participating in that, certainly reach out. But that is a group of healthcare executives. Executives like chief nursing and chief medical officers, as well as chief medical information officers and some academics. And we work as a group independently to address some of the large challenges in healthcare today and determine how we can best come up with intelligent automation solutions, and then actually go and design those and start getting it out to the industry. So it's had a lot of success, and also it's had a big impact on healthcare. Jeff, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'd finally like to introduce Dr. Venu Kondal, who is founder CEO of a California ACO. And he's joining us today from a vehicle while he is not driving at this time. So thank you so much for taking the time today. Could you share a little bit about your background?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Life 365, to sponsoring this. I'm a practicing physician for the last 25 years, and I'm board certified in internal medicine and nephrology and transplant medicine. And I founded several risk-bearing organizations like ACOs and direct contracting entities, and help run IPAs. And we have a vertically integrated clinic structure, and I also oversee several dialysis units, and actively take part in several trade and social charitable organizations. And my recent endeavor is at understanding learning technology and partnership, with technology associations. But I'm also interested in contributing to reforming medical education, which is kind of not touched since last 100 years, since invention of allopathic medicine. So I founding in a health science university in greater Sacramento area. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And in terms of today's podcast, attendees will be on mute while please share your questions within the Q&A box at any time during the session, and we'll certainly attempt to weave these questions into our discussion today. But I'd like to begin, Dr. Arun, with you and learn a bit more about how you decided to enter the field of AI and machine learning decades ago, before this was a mainstream term and focus of the market.
Well, Jeff, like most interesting things in life, it wasn't a decision. Uh-huh. It just happened. So I was in my undergrad, actually in India, in the late 80s, and I got pulled into a project around speech recognition. And that got me completely excited about broadly what's called signal analysis. So from speech recognition in my undergrad, I got my master's at Louisiana State working on satellite images and satellite image processing. And from there, when I got to Michigan, we were doing computer vision to guide robots to drive around the campus of the University of Michigan. So I kind of got into it. But my biggest application of AI at scale was post 9/11 in Homeland Security, when through IBM's research division, a group of researchers and software engineers, we ended up creating one of the first intelligent searchable video systems. And as you can imagine, post 9/11, that got a lot of demand, and we ended up deploying these AI models across thousands of cameras in several US cities. And that experience of applying AI at scale has taught me so many lessons, and also it's given me such a deep appreciation for what happens behind the scenes to keep our homelands secure. So I take my hat off to all those people who work in Homeland Security and do things that keep us safe.
And I've heard that you were overall responsible for the largest math and sciences team in the country focused on AI machine learning initiatives.
Yes. So Jeff, I'll refine that answer, that suggestion a bit. So at IBM, they nominate people to be what are called distinguished engineers. If you make significant commercial contributions with advanced technology, you're made a distinguished engineer. And when they made me a distinguished engineer because of my video work, they gave me a new assignment to be the first distinguished engineer for the math sciences department at IBM Research. Hmm. And the math sciences department had 300 plus PhDs and mathematicians who were doing many, many interesting things with data and math. And that's what AI is, right? It's data and math. And my job was really to understand all of that, make sense of it, and figure out how to apply it commercially in many different industries. So it was indeed a fascinating learning experience, going from retail to travel to smart cities and healthcare, if you will.
Excellent. And so therefore, as you were focusing some of your time at IBM on healthcare, and you have since launched your own company some time ago, focused entirely on healthcare, what do you consider the greatest limitation of applying AI and machine learning throughout healthcare today?
Often when we think about AI, at least today, if you say the word AI, the first thing that pops to our mind is what, Jeff? What comes to your mind if I say AI today?
Chat GPT.
Exactly. ChatGPT, right? But what does ChatGPT do? You can have a conversation, you can ask a question, and it gives you an answer, right? But the real question is, how actionable is that answer? You know, can you take something that ChatGPT puts out and make a multi-million-dollar decision based on that, right? Or can you actually treat a patient based on what ChatGPT puts out? Now, that the second part of the question, which is how actionable is the intelligence, is often ignored, or people don't get to it till later in the cycle. Often many customers spend lots of money building big data warehouses and applying models, only to realize that the model may tell them, oh, here's a very nice predictive insight of which patient is going to feel sick, you know, 6 months from now. But what is the process to actually go engage that patient? How do you act on that intelligence? That is the biggest gap. So in my mind, at Bloom and in all the projects we do, we try and start at the other end. We say, what are the feasible actions that you can really take in a given process? And how can I build intelligence into that, that process to enable that action or to automate the process? So I'll summarize again, basically, thinking about the action before you create the intelligence, in my mind, has been the biggest gap.
Very good. And, you know, it's interesting where some of the capabilities of AI machine learning insights are identifying actions. That's where the intelligent automation can pick up from there. So maybe, Jeff, could you tell us a little bit about when and how you acquired interest in robotic process automation?
Sure, I can tell you exactly when it was. It was 23 years ago when my wife lost a 3-year battle to breast cancer at 35. And at the time, I was fortunate enough that I had a job and an employer who allowed me great flexibility. So while she was going through this, I was with her the entire time. I was constantly at the hospital, at the doctors, at the infusion centers, and I got to see the inefficiencies of healthcare up close and personal. The things like constantly waiting for labs, waiting for images, waiting for the oncologist, waiting for the next decision, even trying to get the oncology team to be able to actually go look for trials and alternative medications and treatments and things like that. And I was getting very, very frustrated and decided, okay, I'm going to have to take action here. I got to know all the nurses. I got to know the oncologist schedule. I got to know the lab techs, the image techs. I got to know everybody involved. And I got to know what schedules so they would let me know when things were ready. And even if the oncologist wasn't there, I would go downstairs. I'd get the information. I'd bring it up. The nurse would say, well, the oncologist is on rounds. They should be coming out of this room soon, but then they have a meeting to go to. I'd take the data and find the oncologist and sit down and actually walk down the hall to their next point and show it and discuss it and say, okay, what should we do next? I actually did the research and located the trials that were available, talked to other oncologists all over across the country and pulled that information together and brought it to the care team. And we were able to get my wife enrolled in a couple of those and had a huge impact. It wasn't until a couple of years later, and I was asked to write a book about the experience. I never did, but I did sit down and collect my notes, and I'm reading through it, and I realized I was filling a huge gap in healthcare, and that a gap still exists today. And to Arun, to your point, I mean, that's what intelligent automation is, right? You have data, you have information, and sometimes it's a matter, okay, how do we get this to the right place? How do we get this to the clinician that can actually impact the positive outcome, can actually speed time to treatment? At the time, when all this was happening, I was largely involved in healthcare data, and I had the sense that there is a huge solution here to healthcare. We just don't have the right technology yet. So as I progressed in data, I then got into the analytics and started doing predictive models. And then Arun, you know, at some point it occurred to me exactly like what you just said, where's the action? How can we make this action? And that's when I got into automation and ultimately intelligent automation.
Very good. And with the power of intelligent automation to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of healthcare, what is the typical current state of healthcare enterprises applying intelligent automation today?
It's still what I would call the adoption phase. There's a recent study that KLAS put out that said over 60% of healthcare system executives fully intend to leverage automation throughout their enterprise. However, two-thirds of them feel like they're unable to do that because they don't have a strategy and they don't know how to go about and find the true ROI with automation. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that we see. One is automation today in a lot of spaces in healthcare is thought of as just simple RPA, robotic process automation, which is largely being used for tasks for a single point solution. So let's say we're going to process an invoice, or we're going to move patient data from our intake enrollment system, and we're going to put that in our EHR. All right, that's what a lot of it is. And it's very simple. It's very straightforward, but it is indeed hard to jump from there to how do we scale to the enterprise, and let alone how do we get ROI out of it. So what is needed and where it's headed is embracing the larger intelligent automation, which includes NLG, NLP, Arun's AI, ML. It includes all these other different types of things that can come together and focus on a true end-to-end solution. So like I mentioned earlier, continuum of care. There's no reason today with the technology, as long as we put it together in the right way, that we can't fully automate that entire patient experience from admission through acute care, discharge, post-acute. And continually, we're shifting, as Kent at Life 365 always says, we're shifting care to the left. We're doing a left shift from reactive to proactive. So healthcare is still very early in that stage, but it's starting to pick up some good speed and it's very, very promising.
Very good. So Dr. Condal would love to learn a little bit more about your pathway of ultimately launching a new accountable care organization, beginning more as a provider serving a group of patients to now a larger ACO organization?
Jeff, over a period of time, while practicing nephrology and transplant medicine, I realized that the cost of the care and the quality are interrelated. And when we looked at the patient population that we serve, which are one of the most expensive cohorts in medicine, that is transplant care and post-transplant care and dialysis care. And the group of the patients that we would serve were less than 1,000 patients, and the cost of the care was astronomical. And I was able to look at to see for entire life, and if I take if I would continue to practice same way, I would be able to impact a few more 1,000 patients, and that would be end of it. And there was not a larger opportunity to bend the cost curve or to practice value-based care. And while I was in that thought that value-based care was announced through Obamacare, through federal act, Congress approved creation of accountable care organizations. And I jumped in, and other than the Poynie ratios and advanced payment model ACOs, the five of them they approved in the entire country. One of them I founded called Golden Life ACO in state of California that was only accountable care organization in state. So we were one of the five federally funded, advancedly formed ACOs. And that was the journey that has begun. And once we understood the value of bringing the value for both CMS to the patients and the providers, and that was an attracting point. And you know, the triple aim was center tenant or core tenant for the formation and of the ACO, believing in that triple aim, what made ACO happened.
In considering there's an opportunity to apply people, process, and technology in order to advance the success of an accountable care organization, what would you consider the most important lessons learned over time?
Over the time, when we started with like 5,500 patients as the only Medicare fee-for-service cohort, even at that level, it was getting hard to have a visibility of events, emerging risk, predicting other than the actuarial analysis that we were provided for last 2 years on these patients. It was getting harder. One of the biggest learning is that to have a better visibility and to take a right action and to truly bend the cost curve and improve the quality outcomes, I think realize that technology is needed. And as we grew in the last 9 years, maybe 8.5 or 9 years, from 5,000 patients to almost like 170,000 patients who are under risk and value-based care that we own or operate, we realized that technology is essential. We tried almost 10, 15 different sort of technologies, helping, as Jeff said, a solution pointed towards a particular issue, but there was no enterprise type of solution that was available to would manage the entire ACO or in a population health based enterprise level. And the combination of it was very difficult. So we were started looking into what if we could build an entire, you know, having a solution that would be able to take care of the entire enterprise, because there are many parts in the ACO. One, you need to have an advanced analysis and reporting and measuring for the quality. Another side, it is a compliance. Another side, financial performance.
And recognizing there's many different areas that you could apply AI, machine learning, and intelligent automation. If we take an example of the revenue cycle management process, Dr. K, could you comment on some of the opportunities you see to apply those capabilities to improve profitability of your accountable care organization?
The revenue cycle model would work. I wouldn't call revenue cycle model, because one of the ways that accountable care organizations are going away from a encounter-based or in a fee-for-service-based and event-based billing and collection cycle to a capitated model where the revenue cycle would look totally different than what if you're in a hospital or in a clinic where you're seeing a patient, a visit is billed and collected, where there is a significant need for a revenue cycle systems and management. And so slowly there is a movement away from that to create in a value-based care that you are given X amount of the dollars per patient per year. Then you manage within that budget, within that given allocated budget, you manage the outcomes and your responsibilities, and you pay for the claims. And in that particular case, in revenue cycle has not a significant use, but I think in an overall healthcare, I think there is a greater need and a greater but also immediate need that revenue cycle management systems to advance to the point, taking care of the patient accounts and billing on right time, collecting on right time and coding right. And I think it's a very complex area. I think further advancement using AI would tremendously benefit.
Excellent. And in considering, you know, there's a broad audience that can be listening in to this particular new normal broadcast. Arun, could you describe how you would apply AI machine learning to accomplish the goals of making the revenue cycle management process more efficient and more effective, ultimately moving the needle on profitability?
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Yes, absolutely. So the word revenue cycle kind of conjures up a picture, but truly the revenue cycle starts when the patient walks into the door of a healthcare provider. That's when the revenue cycle really starts, because if you don't capture the right insurance information, then your claim is going to get rejected on the other end. So through that entire cycle, you can look at how intelligence and automation can help, right from the intake process through things like benefit verification, through generating clean claims. And I'm just going to pick that as an example. So today, as you know, there are several companies that are working on what I call automated AI-based claim coders. Right. So today there is this idea that there's an encounter that generates the electronic medical record that gets passed to somebody who's a coder, and they pick it up and put in the codes. So there are several companies that are looking at applying AI to say, can we simply use AI to automatically generate the claim without having the need for a coder in that process? So in some simple cases of outpatient encounters, it's possible to do this. As it gets more complex, you need the AI to work with the coder. And I'll give you a couple more examples further down. So as you get further down, Even when you use something like an automated quarter, you still need to ensure that your claims are in compliance and that you're not risking an audit of some sort. So now you can use an AI auditor, which can start looking at all of the claims that your institution is filing and ensuring that you're getting the most money while staying clear of potential audit risk. So getting the most accurate claims. So that's an AI auditor. And I'll wrap by saying, well, AI can also be used in how you look at contract variance. At the end of the day, yes, you file a claim, it gets paid, but did the payer actually pay what was agreed to in the contract? That's another place where you can apply AI. So I'd say almost every step within the revenue cycle can use data and intelligence, but also automation.
And as a follow-up question, Arun, there's a million AI machine learning solutions in the marketplace. There is an incredible amount of noise. So what is the differentiating methodology that you have taken based upon all of the decades of experience in solving big challenges in AI machine learning?
So I'll answer that with a couple of points, Jeff. The first one is really to start thinking about AI is a solution. It's a technology, right? How often do you think about what engine is running within your car or your blender? Or, you know, you really always think about the function. So in my mind, the differentiating methodology should be to start with the question. What is your question? What is your goal, right? So it's very, very important that you get the question pointed in the right direction. And what we've noticed is every time you apply AI, it certainly gives you an answer to a question and leads to an action, but it also generates newer questions because you now see the process through a different lens. Once you start applying AI. So using questions as an integral part of your solution design is one of the learnings, Jeff. And the second one is really to think through the processes. At the end of the day, AI is not going to do everything for you. It's going to do a piece of the puzzle. The question is, you know, which part of the puzzle is it going to solve for? Right? If you're looking at the revenue cycle as we're talking about it, one of the parts of it is prior authorization. Before the patient can be treated, there's a prior authorization process. And you can apply AI to automate that process. But that's never going to be done without an actual human in the loop. So that relationship between the process and the person and how that connects back to the technology is very, very critical. And understanding that upfront leads to much more effective implementations of AI.
Very good. And so as, you know, an AI solution such as Bloom produces insights that identify actions that need to be driven, Jeff, could you speak to how intelligent automation can then advance the revenue cycle management process in a way that can generate dollars for a healthcare organization, and give us your perspective on that front?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, Bloom's proven that doing the different types of AI analytics that they are through simple things like code corrections that can put back millions and millions of revenue back in the system. But it still needs to be actioned, as Arun was saying, right? Let's say you find several hundred claims that need to have code adjusted, and here's X amount of revenue that you're going to get reimbursed because of that. Well, you still need to go do that. So automation can step in at that point, take all of those claims, adjust the codes, and submit. And you've done that without any kind of human intervention at all, other than maybe some validation, some visual validation they have to do. So that's the value of intelligent automation in that case, because it actually carries out the action that was identified, the need that was identified by the AI. Now that's on the reactive side. Now we can take that and shift it, I think, to what Arun was saying. We just take that all the way up to the very front end. And everything else, you know, the revenue cycle is the tail end of the entire healthcare system, right? Everything ends up there. Well, let's go back out and see what kinds of other things are having an impact on that. To like Arun said, you know, are we practicing care? Are we delivering care and doing the right procedures and the right levels of quality that are in line with our contractual obligations and our quality obligations? And how does that translate into, you know, you find those types of, if we have the analytics that show what needs to change, we can then push that upstream and use automation to monitor and track that. And so now it becomes a proactive action that gets carried out. And you look at just the claim side, I'm looking at Change Healthcare's denial index report from 2022. It came out a few months ago. The denial rates in the U.S. have gone up from 10% in 2020 to 12% in 2022. Those 2 percentage points has cost the industry billions in denials, as well as labor used to work those denials and ultimately write-offs. There's another interesting stat here. 82% of denials are potentially avoidable. And out of that 82%, 22% of them are non-recoverable. So that, again, drives importance to, let's take the analytics, let's analyze what's happening with our denials, and let's take that information and move it further upstream so that we're improving charge capture and coding. We're ensuring that we've got the proper credentials of the physicians. We are completing the pre-auths with the right information and the right images and the medical necessities and everything else that goes into that. We can, as long as we have the data from the AI, we can then take it and we can train the automation through machine learning to recognize, as automation is processing these claims, they can see situationally understand there's something not right about this claim. It's missing a certain piece of information. It's coded incorrectly or not as accurately as it should be. And the automation can correct that up in the beginning before it even goes to submission. So again, we're shifting from reactive to proactive, but the AI ML and the automation, hence intelligent automation, is the key to making it all happen.
And as we walk through that scenario focused on revenue cycle management, you know, clearly from both sides, your solutions are extending across the continuum of care. And, I would assume that similar capabilities and AI machine learning insights to action and intelligent automation to drive more efficient, effective processes is something that you're implementing in other areas well beyond revenue cycle management.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Healthcare systems are ripe with opportunities for intelligent automation.
Absolutely. And a focus of this New Normal broadcast is the next revolution. So there's no doubt we've been touching on that, considering that many organizations are in their early adoption or even infancy phase of applying these types of capabilities. However, let's shift visionary. So Jeff, you know, from your viewpoint, if you were to look into a crystal ball, how would you expect healthcare to be transformed over the next decade with intelligent automation?
I think it's underway. The transformation's underway. It's just getting started. I think 10 years from now, I have very high confidence that the issues that we see in healthcare today will be something of the past. I think we'll be in an incredibly better position 10 years from now. It's interesting. We've always known what the solution is. We've always had the answer. And what's happened over the years, a lot of the technologies have developed, but they're still operating in a siloed manner. I think what's happening now, and I think intelligent automation is the glue and kind of the catalyst that can reach out to all those different pieces and pull it together. It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you start to work on a jigsaw puzzle, you got to turn all the pieces up first, right? So we've got all the pieces turned up on our jigsaw puzzle. And now we've got the picture on the box. Now we can start plugging things together. And I think that's going to really take off. And I think it's, you know, it's no coincidence. We've got AI represented here, intelligent automation sponsored by the data source with Life365. That's it right there. That's the holy grail. And as long as we're harnessing intelligent automation to tie all that together, it's going to be a huge success, and it's going to drive that healthcare transformation.
Excellent. And passing to you, Arun, in this realm of applying AI machine learning to enterprise-wide solutions, how do you expect healthcare to be transformed over the next decade with those capabilities?
So thank you, Jeff. I'll pick up on the other Jeff's answer. So it's, you know, it's about, as he said, bridging silos. And if you take it all the way to the end, there's only one place where all silos actually come together, and that's at the patient.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah,
that's the only place where everything can truly be integrated. And I think the environment is going to drive us there because of very many new ways in which healthcare is going to get delivered. As you think about remote care, urgent care, and I was recently at the APG conference where two secretaries of Health and Human Services were speaking about this topic, and they were basically saying, "Look, remote healthcare has to be turned into interstate commerce so that healthcare can be delivered by any provider in any state across state boundaries." And there's going to be some deregulation of that sort that's going to come in place that's going to simply change where I, Arun, can get my healthcare. And so what that's going to drive in my mind is the need to integrate all of the care that a patient receives, not only acute care, but also preventive care of sorts and other things like exercise and devices that actually measure your activity and those types of things. So all of that has to come together. So I believe all of that integration is going to happen through data, because that's the only way you can actually tie any two things together. And so AI and ML will have a huge role to play in integrating healthcare around the patient, is how I would see things evolving too.
Yeah, and you can even add on top of that, Arun. I mean, just look at the largest tech companies in the world. Look at the shift towards healthcare. And we've got now suddenly Oracle owns Cerner, you know, a big EHR. The other EHR, Epic, is partnered tightly with Microsoft, Google, Amazon. They've all heavily invested in healthcare, and that's, I think, going to be another huge catalyst, Jeff, that's going to drive that transformation going forward.
Absolutely. And Dr. K, could you speak to, you know, where you anticipate placing some investments in technology for the benefit of your accountable care organization over the coming years?
I particularly look at the advancement of AI in healthcare. I see in a population health management would come from identifying the emerging risk, combining the social determinants of health and taking the emerging risk and coming to let the machine learn to identify the risk and mitigate it. I think that could be the holy grail for population health or value-based care approach. But I think the challenge was the predictive analytics, I think, are not really helped for the last 4 or 5 years, because whether population is ready to accept the behavioral change, or the providers are ready to accept the behavioral change is the issue. So the next thing is to identify what type of patient groups that you manage. So there are three different type of groups, or four different type of groups of patients, based on the knowledge and the motivation to change. If you give them up, and I think one group that needs work is the gave up. There is a 20% of patient population who have chronic disease and contributing to the cost and low quality. They gave up. How do you identify in 150,000 patients and address them through behavior, genetics, nutrition, and cost of care management is kind of a goal to identifying the technology into that.
Very good. Well, I'd like to address just a couple of questions that have come from the audience. The first question is, why are coders important? The doctors are much better at knowing what service has been provided. So maybe Jeff or Arun, if you'd like to address that question.
Sure, I'll take a crack. Jeff, so when you think about coding, it's partly, yes, the doctor knows what service was delivered, but the coder needs to understand what is the model for the payment for delivering that service. So they're not exactly the same. The fact that the doctor delivered a service doesn't mean he knows how it gets bundled or what the prereq things are that need to be part of the claim, right? Or the several other factors that need to go into a claim. So I believe the idea of a coder is much needed. The question is, can simpler claims be completely automated while more complex types of care can be assisted by AI and automation?
Jeff, did the attendee reveal if they're a physician or a coder?
They did not. So that's a good question. A second question I would like to address from the audience is, in a fee-for-service world, the ability to reevaluate and appropriately recover miscoded claims is valuable. Yet, could you speak to how AI machine learning applies even in the value-based care model arrangements to improve the coding?
Is that Dr. Chang?
I think it's maybe a question for you, Arun, and you know, I think you could maybe speak to the opportunity of identifying DRGs that would be more appropriate as one example.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Jeff. So the question was, how does potentially revising a claim work in the value-based care world? And Jeff, as you pointed out, we'll pick up the case of inpatient claims, which have to be coded in the DRG payment scheme, if you will. And so, Jeff, as you know, within let's take the example of, say, knee replacement. So knee replacement gets coded as a 472 family of DRGs. And there are three levels of knee replacement based on the acuity and the comorbidity of the patient. So from a 472, which is the simplest, to a 471, which is with comorbidities and complications, to a 472, a 470, which has the highest level of reimbursement. So often, as the questioner was asking, a coder might have taken a knee replacement claim and coded it as a 471. But maybe AI can identify and say, well, this is potentially a 470, which could make the difference of thousands of dollars of reimbursement. So there is a way. So you can, once you apply and identify how you need to change your value-based care code, for example, in the DRG model, you can certainly go and do that.
And Arun, I think it's important for you, you know, if you you know, explain how you get to that point. You're using data, you're using historical data from the healthcare system as well as from CMS, correct? So you're looking at what are the probabilities that this upshift or downshift should happen.
This is correct, Jeff. Part of when we talk about AI, the first most important component of an AI solution is training. So Basically, the intelligence comes because the machine has poured through thousands and thousands and thousands of claims and has learned some patterns, right? And the way we do that is we start by using CMS data and other claims data historically. So we can look at like the knee replacement DRG, and we learn all the patterns of charge codes, length of stays, diagnosis codes that typically go with these different DRGs. And that learning comes from huge volumes of data. And that's the intelligence that the model brings to the table. So when, Jeff, a new claim is filed, we can take that claim and bounce it off and compare it in microseconds to thousands of previous claims within that same family and immediately say, hey, this fits or this doesn't fit, right? So that's exactly how the upshift, downshift detection works using AI.
Very good. And the individual did clarify that they are a business owner of a revenue cycle management company and that in some cases, coders can be down selecting the codes, which can affect revenue. While my understanding of your solution, Arun, on the AI machine learning side, is that your solution is able to identify the upcoding opportunities that are going to identify millions of dollars of incremental revenue, while also determining whether or not you are potentially out of compliance and even flagging those opportunities to appropriately downselect a code. So thank you for that question. We really appreciate it. But I would like to thank the audience for attending today's session. Thank Arun, Jeff, and Dr. Condal for your participation, great insights. Today's video recording and a library of popular podcasts can be accessed from the website www.newnormal.buzz, B-U-Z-Z. Thanks again for joining, and I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day.
Yep. Great.
Thank you, Jim.